Hello and welcome to First to 15, the official podcast of USA Fencing. I'm your host, Brian Wendell, and in this show, you're going to hear from some of the most inspiring, interesting, and insanely talented people in this sport we all love. First to 15 is for anyone in the fencing community, and even for those just checking out fencing to see what it's all about. So whether you're an Olympian or Paralympian, a newcomer, a seasoned veteran, a fencing parent, a fan, or anyone else in this wonderful community, this podcast is for you. With that, let's get to today's episode. Enjoy! You might know today's guest simply as The Fencing Coach. That's his handle on Instagram and at the website thefencingcoach.com. His name is Damian Layfelt, and he's been writing The Fencing Coach blog since 2012, and that's actually the same year he helped coach Team USA's Suzanne Stettinius to the London Olympics in modern pentathlon. He's now a coach at Nova Fencing Club in Virginia, and Damian's also a former épée fencer who had a successful career at Brandeis University, where he graduated in 2009, and he also won gold in the men's épée team event at the 2012 North American Cup. On top of all that, he's also the strategy and data lead for the Team USA National Épée Team. So we're going to talk about what exactly that means and a whole bunch more in today's episode. Welcome to the podcast, Damian.
Brian, thank you so much for having me, and thank you for that warm introduction.
Yeah, there's a lot that we can cover here, and I want to just dive right into it. Can you kind of tell us how you got into fencing in the first place, you know, how you got started? And then I believe you grew up in Florida, so somehow you ended up in Boston to fence in college. So I'd love to hear how that happened too.
Yeah, so my best friend since kindergarten, a guy named Gustav Lonius, his dad was a champion level fencer in Sweden, and he got us into it when we were like 8 years old. He brought us over to DC Fencers Club over in Silver Spring with Janusz Smolenski, who's still the head coach there and still at it, still very active. And, you know, we just love it first sight. We got into it when we were young, just the idea of like swashbuckling and everything and hitting your friends with swords. So we started when we were really young, and I've been doing it since. Yeah, I moved down to Tampa, like you said, you know, towards the end of middle school, and I was working down there with the late, great Jim Campoli and Boyko Kristovic and also Alec Rumov. And then I just, you know, I did a visit to Brandeis, fell in love at first sight there, and had an opportunity to work with Bill Shipman, and he was just instrumental in progressing my fencing career. So yeah, Brandeis, proud Brandeis alum, and I hope we find a really great new head coach, really sticks to lose Jenny.
Yeah, she's on to a really good opportunity though. So when do you remember first being interested in the sport beyond just the swashbuckling angle and having fun on the strip, and really kind of like the strategy specifically behind épée? Like, when was there a time when that switch was turned on?
You know, I think even going back to high school, like I would take obsessive notes. Like my dad would record almost every single bout that I did, and I would take like obsessive notes about every touch, like, you know, what went right, what went wrong, opportunities for improvement. Mm-hmm. Was the action tight enough? Was it too big? And so like I would be very, very like, you know, in the weeds, attention to detail about, you know, documenting every bout. And I think that's a big part of the reason why now with this methodology that we've come up with, you know, it's kind of a continuation of that, but in a little bit of a more professional and rigorous kind of way than what I was doing in a notebook and taking notes down that way.
Yeah, sure. You've taken that kind of into the new decade, right?
Right.
I want to get into that in a second, but a lot of your observations and expertise has gone on to the Fencing Coach blog, which you mentioned in the intro, and also your presence on Instagram, where you give a lot of great tips into, you know, behind the scenes of fencing, specifically épée. But all of that aside, I was interested and kind of surprised to learn that coaching fencing and fencing itself isn't actually your day job. So how do you find time for all of this that you try to pack into your day?
Yeah. So like you said, I work over at Navy Federal Credit Union. That's my full-time job. I'm on our enterprise strategy and change team there. And really the reason I'm able to find the time to do this is because, you know, it starts with my wife. Like, she's just an amazing support figure. She enables me to fulfill all these dreams and, mm-hmm. you know, chase all these goals. And so she's always in my corner. It's really possible to do this because of her. And also just, you know, the work-life balance that's enabled by my job. I have, you know, a wonderful team that enables me to pursue the things that I love outside of work. So mm-hmm. I'm really, really fortunate just to have this amazing support system between my wife, my job, my manager. Shout out to Randy if he ever gets a hold of this. But yeah, I'm in a really good place. I'm so fortunate to have these opportunities that I do.
That's awesome. So let's talk about the fencing coach on Instagram. We mentioned that you're at the fencing coach, and I think the account is, I would characterize it as kind of a mix of your personal life. There's some fitness in there, and of course, a bunch of fencing. And one thing you've been doing is answering these anonymous questions from followers about fencing. And sometimes they get very specific, very detailed, and I think you always present such good answers. Some are helpful, some are like fun and a little bit snarky, which I like too. So what's been your approach to that account and interfacing with these fencing strangers out there?
Yeah, so I am really, really happy. I think the account is kind of a conduit of my honesty. Like, I try to be just a straight shooter with every interaction that I have. And, you know, if somebody is in a situation where they need to be told, like, hey, you know, you're in a kind of dire situation here with your fencing, like, maybe this isn't working out with your club, I like to be accessible to people. I like to be able to tell them like it is and everything. And so I think it's just really an opportunity to get, you know, my straight shooter kind of personality out there. But I like, you know, my mission has always been with the fencing coach to take the complexity of fencing and make it accessible to people. And so the videos are an opportunity for me to, obviously, I'm not going to give the entire kind of conduit of what I'm watching with, or the entire gamut of what I'm watching with, you know, international video. But if I see like a cool touch, then I'm like, this could be an educational moment. I like to take that, break it down in a way with like really simple language that people understand. So like you said, like, it's a combination of my personal life. It's me being as honest as I can. I like to use social media. I think a lot of the time we're only putting on there like our best selves. And, you know, for me, I like to use the fencing coach to just be honest and be vulnerable and, you know, let people know and try to lead the way and show them that, like, it's okay to not be okay. It's okay to be vulnerable. And so it's a little bit of everything, right? It's me. What you're reading there every day is me, Damian Layfeld. It's not me with a filter. It's me, you know, going in and just being as honest as I can be to the benefit of the community, I think.
Totally. Yeah. And I would say you're succeeding and to keep it up. And so one thing that you, for good reason, can't get into too much detail about on Instagram is one of the main reasons we wanted to have you on, which is your role as the strategy and data lead for the Team USA Epee team, as we said at the top. And I think this is a job that some of our listeners might not even know existed. So can you tell us how you kind of secured this position and how you would characterize your role? So that's kind of a fancy way of saying that old line, you know, what is it you do here?
Yeah. So I'll put it to you this way. So I started this project, this research project for my thesis with the U.S. Fencing Coaches Association. And anytime you're going for the fencing master level, you have to do a thesis where, you know, you're essentially adding something to the body of work for the coaching community. And I kind of took a step back and I was like, you know, we haven't won an Olympic medal individual, not two, we won a team one, but we haven't won an individual Olympic or world medal since 1924 in Epee. And I started wondering myself, why could that be? Like we have these incredible athletes. I mean, if you watch Kat, Curtis, Anna, I mean, I could, Yaser, I could rattle off the whole list of names. They're incredible athletes. And I love watching them fence. And I'm looking at this talent that we have in relation to the rest of the world. And I'm like, this should be our time to shine. Paris 2024 is our time to shine. And it will be. Like, trust me, I'm like watching the progress and what these fencers are capable of. And I firmly believe in my heart that these people are going to be ready to go and conquer Paris. But so I started this research project, right, to ask the question, what is the rest of the international community doing that we're not? And I started kind of documenting rigorously, touch by touch, and trying to understand, you know, every single touch. I capture about 26 fields of metadata, right, that go into every single touch. And the way that I originally transitioned this from, you know, a research project to becoming this official source of data was Dwight Smith, who's, you know, a dear friend of mine going back to when we were in, like, cadets. He's now, you know, traveling with the team a lot, coaching. He's wonderful coach, amazing guy. And, you know, he and I had been talking a lot about this project, and he went over to the Bern World Cup, and Yaser Ramirez was about to fence with Igor Ryslin, who, Ukrainian guy at the time of that tournament, he was number one in the world. And Dwight was like, hey, you know, I know you've been doing this research project. Like, what is the data saying on Igor Ryslin? And so I was like, all right, this is how you want to approach every touch with him in the beginning. You know, when you don't have a lead, this is what you want to do when you maintain a lead based on the data. And so like, here's a part of the strip that you want to be on and things like that. And so I remember like, I just put it out there and I was kind of like, all right, this is going to be the first time that we're really using this in real time. And, you know, I got up, I think the bell was at like 3 a.m. and I set an alarm and I'm like, all right, I want to see if what this is doing and how this is working. So like I get up and, you know, my wife is still asleep and I'm watching this video and I'm like, and you know, he's doing this strategy that we talked about like to a T. And, you know, not only did he beat Reisland, he like, it was 15-8, 15-9. Yacer fenced amazingly. And so from there, that was like where Dwight was like, hey, you know what? Maybe we should talk about doing this to a broader scale. And I started conversations with Natalie Dostard and Franco. And, you know, they talked about bringing me on because I had already done about, you know, 1,500, 2,000 touches at the time and had a lot of up-to-date data. And we just started those conversations and you know, here we are now. It's been a really, really fun journey so far. It's been, I think I started 6 months ago, and I think we're finding a lot of really cool creative ways to use the data. I think we're, you know, pairing our athletes really, really well. They go out there and their opponents are like old familiar friends to them by the time they fence with them. So it's still very much in the early phases, but it's been a really cool journey thus far to see kind of how we're using this data and how we're readying our athletes.
I think that's fascinating. And I'm really interested in the technical side and as much as you're willing and able to share. You know, you said there's these 26 different data points. So when you're watching a bout, is there any of this that's automated or is it all hand cataloged? I'm thinking when I'm watching a baseball game, right when that ball hits the bat, we immediately know the exit velocity of the home run, right? And the angle that it launched at. So obviously that's all automated, but is any of what you're doing a formula or an automation or is this all manual?
So it started manual, right? Okay. I was literally in an Excel file going line by line, every single touch, hitting pause on YouTube, coding this in manually in Excel. Mm-hmm. And then thank God, you know, Kate Reisinger, I talked to her about this early on and, you know, we've made, and I can share this part, you know, we requested an investment for a license in Darkfish. It's a common kind of sports analytics software. Franco had used that in Switzerland when he was the head Epic coach over in Switzerland. And basically, Dartfish automates a lot of it, right? You set up what you call a tagging panel, and you put in all the different variables that you want to go into a touch. And then, you know, it's not all automated. It's like you click as you go, and it codes it in that way. But then the really cool thing about Dartfish is that you can then take the analytics and you put them up on the cloud, and basically an athlete can click on any bout and, you know, they're able to see kind of all of the different analytics that went into that individual bout. We're making playlists now. So like if there's a particular opponent that, you know, somebody's going up against, we don't need to go to YouTube and manually watch every clip. Now we can go into Dartfish and say, okay, you know, we're fencing Sergey Bita. I'll use that as an example. Here's every touch that's ever been scored by Sergey Bita. Here's every touch that's ever been scored against Sergey Bita. So it gives you both the analytics and it also gives you these customized playlists based on the variables that you want to be watching.
That's really cool. So it strikes me that sure, everyone's going to have tendencies that they probably don't even know about and techniques that they're going to turn to again and again. But at some point, people know that this data is out there about them. So how much of this is continuing to evolve at all points? You know, you're getting a picture of this fencer from another country that Team USA is going to be going up against, but it could change because that person may change their strategy. So do you constantly feel like you're trying to like catch up?
I feel like in the beginning, yes, I felt like we were playing catch up. I feel like we're at the point now where when a fencer starts to tactically shift what they're doing, we quickly are able to identify that in the data. And, you know, a lot of fencers have made huge tactical shifts after Tokyo, right? They went into Tokyo with plan A and plan A didn't work. And so they made this shift. And so we're able to now kind of look at that data and the trends and what you're seeing. And, you know, I'm not getting too much into the weeds here. I'm being intentionally vague, but we are able to kind of proactively identify changes in tactics that we're seeing from a lot of our international opponents and get ahead of them before they get ahead of us.
Sure. Are you using this to allow Team USA's athletes to study themselves? In other words, figure out their own tendencies and maybe avoid those that aren't effective?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So we're using Dartfish to do motion analysis too, right? So if we're seeing some kind of preparatory tendencies in our athletes or in our opponents as well that are like glaring, mm-hmm. we're able to kind of, like Dartfish has these really cool tagging annotation things that like will show you like the angle that they're at, the distance between two objects. And so we're able to use that to kind of relay that to the coaches if we see something and say, hey, you know, so-and-so has this kind of preparation and it's not working because they're opening up too much or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so they're able to use that really in the weeds, nitty-gritty detail to then take it back to the athlete and say, you know, check this out. Just something to be aware of when you're training.
Where does the element of speed come in when it comes to getting this information into athletes' hands? Because sometimes, I mean, yes, you can look at the tableau and see who your potential opponents will be, but you can't scout, you know, 60 people, right? So, you know, in an hour, let's say. So is there information that can be relayed in that short amount of time before the next round? Is it that sophisticated?
Yeah, so I'll put it to you this way. We now have data on 102 different fencers from around the world in both men's and women's, and that's growing over time with every event, right?
Sure.
And we've got this period now between Worlds and the first World Cup of the season where we're collecting more data. So we have two ways that we get this to the athletes, or a couple ways that we get this to the athletes, really, right? So I talked about the playlists and the videos, but you know, I'm a big NFL junkie, right? Like that's like my big passion. And so I've been creating these scouting reports in coalition with the coaches where, you know, you aggregate the data, right? And you say, here's all the different things that you need to be aware of. But then we also kind of put together like a list of things to be aware of and, you know, what they look like when they're setting up a touch and how their tendencies might change based on a lead or a deficit. So we're making these like very rich scouting reports that if you pick one of these up, you're gonna know how to fence whoever it is you're up against.
And do you get the sense that other countries are doing the same and to what level?
Yeah. So I think every country is doing some form of video capture / analytics. I'm willing to bet we are doing this to a level of detail that's probably deeper than a lot of the other countries. But like I know Franco was doing this in Switzerland before he came over. I know the Japanese team has some kind of like video analysis person like full time doing that as well. So everybody's doing it. Everybody's doing some kind of film study. But I think the level of detail that we're capturing these analytics, I think we're kind of leading the way right there.
That's awesome. That's good to hear. What do you hear from the athletes? Because I imagine that they remember, you know, when they were a junior or cadet and trying to find videos on YouTube of their opponent and, you know, scrambling to, you know, like scrub on their, on these tiny phone screens to see a touch again and again. And now they have these detailed scouting reports, right? So have athletes reached out to you to express how they're enjoying this new potential advantage that they have?
So most of the communication, right, I like to stay in the shadows. I like to stay behind the scenes. The communication to the athletes is really going through Sergey, Franco, Natalie, Cedric. And, you know, that being said, like there are some athletes on the team who I've had longstanding relationships with, like Justin, you and I regularly have conversations about tactics and things like that. And, you know, even former athletes like Jake Coyle, you know, he hasn't formally announced his retirement yet, but early on when I started this project, Jake was instrumental in being like, hey, Damian, this is something that your model has this, this, and this, but you might want to consider this too. I would have loved to see this when I was fencing. And, you know, Ben Breton, former world champ, another great example. He's been really, he gave me some great feedback on the model and things that I want to consider. But, you know, all in all, most of the communications to the athletes is going through the coaches as it should.
Yeah, that's really cool. You mentioned the example of getting up at 3 a.m. to watch Yacer. What does it feel like for you when you say, when you see a bout and realize that the algorithm was perfect and or as close to perfect as it can be and accurately predicted something that really might have turned the tide for a Team USA athlete?
I'll put it to you this way. I give them the breadcrumbs, right? And at the end of the day, though, it's not the analytics that are driving the victories. It's their own strategy. It's their grit. It's their athleticism. So I see the analytics as almost like a cherry on top, but it is by no means what I'm researching that's driving these victories. It's, you know, those athletes are working their tails off hundreds of hours a month and just, you know, it's really on them. I think these are the breadcrumbs that we're giving them. And we're giving them, put it to you this way, we're giving them a compass, right? We're not giving them a blueprint. And, but that being said, you know, it's rewarding to be a part of this process and see what they're able to do. And, you know, I'm hopeful that the analytics have helped contribute to some victories or maybe another touch that they might not have gotten there here and there. But at the end of the day, they are, you know, I think tertiary to the athlete's own determination, the national coaches, the personal coaches, right? I think the analytics are kind of just nice to have.
Yeah. And you talked about how impressive our EPE team is and how amazing these athletes are. And so I can imagine that, you know, even if just to make up a number, even if we're giving them a, you know, 2% edge, right? You need every little edge with how close some of these bouts are. So like every little bit counts and helps.
Yeah. And that's exactly it. Like the skill margin between the best fencers in the world and, you know, your second tier fencers is really small. There's not like a huge gap in EPE where the number one in the world is like dominant and nobody's going to touch them, right? So like every little detail matters. If you like drop your hand a little bit too far in a preparation, that's something that we can, you know, take advantage of and figure out a way to work around that. If you're leading with your body on some touches or, you know, you're bringing your feet together when you're coming forward in preparation. So like the really small in the weeds minutia is super important in EPE, and that can be the difference between victory and defeat at this level.
So I know you're EPE and you have so much experience with EPE and are helping the national EPE team, but is any of what you're doing, could it be translated to foil and saber, like the model, not necessarily the specifics, but the model itself?
Yeah, I think there's like aspects of it that certainly could.
Okay.
But, you know, I by no means will claim to be a saber or foil expert by any means. But, you know, I'd be really curious to sit down with Greg Macialis one day or Oleg Ochocki and see, like, you know, everything that we're doing research-wise, like, is there any way that you'd be able to take this and replicate it and foil and saber? So I think there's aspects of it. I've created this kind of concept called no moments, if you will. PG for the kids out there. But, you know, I think a lot of those and kind of how you create that window of opportunity for a touch, I think you would see some kind of overlap in foil and saber. But all in all, I think if you were to create a model for those weapons, you would need to probably tweak it, add a couple different fields.
So we've talked a lot about the senior team and the work that you're doing for them and the great athletes and the great coaches. But are there some ways that younger fencers might use the lessons that you've learned to kind of help their own game, you know, before they make the senior team? And what would you recommend as to how they can do similar scouting and, you know, analytics analysis of their own game and their opponents?
Yeah. So, you know, the advice that I would give to that age group, right, is, and this is not really sharing too much of the tea. It's not spilling the tea. It's not disclosing something that's secret. But the way that EPE is moving now is in this direction called one tempo, right? Mm-hmm. Which is the way that I would describe that to anybody listening who might not be aware of what that is like, if you ever see Indiana Jones, Raiders in the Lost Ark, right? There's that scene where the guy's like twirling his sword and he's getting ready and he's like coming in like this all wild. And then, you know, Harrison Ford just takes out a pistol and shoots, right? So you got this guy going in with flash. He's like trying to do all these tricks and everything. And Harrison Ford, you think about it, he hits him with a one tempo shot, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the direction the game is moving. Like almost every touch, you watch it at this level, it's like they close the distance, they set it up with their feet, they close the distance, they finish with a single tempo action. And so anybody who's trying to think about how to take what we're doing and apply it day-to-day fencing, and they want to know how to really position themselves for the long run. When you're practicing, when you're bouting, try to set everything up with your feet, less with your hand. Finish with that one tempo action. That's going to get you ready. If you have aspirations to go on to international level, Olympic level, the more one tempo fencing you're doing, the more you're going to be positioned for success in the long run. So that's what I would say is like best advice that I can give from a, you know, data learnings perspective.
And that's applicable regardless of your opponent, especially at this age we're talking about.
It is, yeah. And, you know, you certainly have fencers that are, you know, predominantly two tempo that they're finding success still doing that. But when you look at the majority of the men and the women at the top, almost all of them are single tempo fencers. One hand motion, one foot motion when they finish the action.
You know, you mentioned those fencers at the top, and obviously you spend a lot of your time watching videos of them. Is that another way for a young fencer to improve their game, is to find a, you know, find a fencer that they admire and want to emulate? Or is that practice maybe not as effective?
Oh, no, it certainly is effective. I mean, I think the best way that kids can find creativity and inspiration is by watching the best fencers in the world and watch what they're doing. You know, I would caution that doing that can backfire sometimes. Like, you watch Max Heinzer, and he's going in for these crazy back flicks over the top and, you know, these jump lunges off the line where he's covering like 30 feet. And that's something that Max Heinzer can do, but, you know, it's not necessarily something that everybody can do. So I'd say, like, yes and no, find that inspiration, right? Find the fencers that you like, that you feel like you'd be able to replicate what they're doing. And don't just pick one, pick a lot of them, right? Because I've been watching, you know, more than 100 fencers now, and I'm like, you know, this fencer has something to offer, this fencer has something to offer. So I'm like seeing all these bits and pieces of what these guys are doing and women are doing that. That's incredible. And so you can find a little bit of something from everybody. And that's one of the best things about fencing.
There's no one secret formula that's guaranteed to win every time, right?
Yeah. Yeah. There's no secret formula. There's no secret moves, right? Like, it's not a game of moves, right? So you might have a really good flesh, you might have a really good lunge, but those things don't matter. It's how you set it up to enable that closing action. So this is a game of a preparation. And that's another thing that I would just say to the younger, you know, fencers that are listening to this, is think about your preparation and using that with your feet to create that window of opportunity, because it's not about those closing actions. It's about how you enable them.
That's awesome. And my final question kind of is a more broad reaching one. And, you know, considering the work that you're able to do for Team USA and all this great behind the scenes expertise that you've been offering, what does success look like for you?
Success for me, I think, is just being here and being a part of this process. But I think, you know, I really desperately would love to see us get both a team and an individual medal in Paris. And I firmly believe, with the coaching staff that we have right now, with the athletes that we have right now, that's going to be possible. It has been 100 years. It'll be 100 years when the Paris Olympics come. It was George Charles Calnon who won a medal, a bronze medal in the 1924 Olympics. And I'm looking at the athletes that we have now. I'm looking at the coaches. I'm looking where we're at relative to our peers. And I think these people are ready to go out there and really deliver and perform. And it's such an exciting time to be a part of this team, Brian, because we're there. We really are. It's just, you know, getting over that little hump, and we're there. We're going to be on the podium in Paris. I firmly believe that, both in team and individual. So, you know, that's
awesome.
That's what I think success is going to look like.
Yeah, I love to hear that. And it was really interesting to go kind of behind the scenes with you. And I know there's even more to come. So thank you to Damian Layfield for joining us. And if people want to see more from you and the amazing content that you've created, or, you know, even ask you an anonymous question about fencing, right? They can follow you at The Fencing Coach on Instagram and then thefencingcoach.com. Damian, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Brian. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to First to 15, the official podcast of USA Fencing. We'll be back with our next conversation in a couple of weeks. In the meantime, you can stay up to date on all the latest fencing news by following us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And if you like this podcast, please help us grow and reach more people by leaving us a rating or review. Until next time, I'm Brian Wendell, and I hope to see you real soon out on the strip. Bye.